Aaron, looking like a dragon. How are you doing? It's good to be chatting to you and Mike here. Probably our final recording of the year. It's been a very busy last 2 weeks. How are you both? How are you both doing? Thank you very much for joining us.
No, I'm good. I'm good, thanks, Matt.
Good, yeah, good, good, good. How's it been? I mean, from our point of view, it doesn't feel like Christmas. That's a song, isn't there? It doesn't feel like Christmas at all. And I fly to the UK on the 24th, Christmas Eve. When I arrive at my parents' house and see the Christmas tree, I might finally start feeling like it's actually Christmas, because this week and the last week has just been insane. The amount of people doing RNSs, going to get their Christmas or end of year reviews done, it's been incredibly busy. But I think, you know, as we were saying earlier, maybe that's a sign of things starting to turn, because it's been a pretty dire year, hasn't it, really?
Baileys and mince pies, that's all you need. As soon as I get on the Baileys and mince pie, I know it's Christmas then. It's always the that's the one that triggers it and kicks it off. So it was a bit of Baileys, few whiskeys, you know, few mince when pies, and you know you're there.
When I was in the Royal Navy, this is a story, and I was in the Royal Navy Reserves years ago, and a bit naive or whatever in my early 20s, I used to like a Baileys, but, you know, it's got a certain connotation, hasn't it, you know, drinking a Baileys. And I saw in the Navy, in this mess down in Portsmouth, there was like a picture, as you find in bars, you know, where you've got advertisements for different tipples. And there was the Baileys, and there was the chocolate, you know, the little chocolate shot cups that you get, you know, at Christmas time. Have you seen them before?
Yeah.
I thought, oh, that's really cool. Went up to the, you know, to the bar and said to the guy, oh, can I have a Baileys, please? And have you got those little chocolate cups? And he just went, nah, mate, we don't have them here. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, I felt a little bit embarrassed as a young
girl. And we don't drink Baileys either. We just put it on the shelf.
Exactly. We don't, exactly, yeah. yes. Exactly. I kind of embarrassed myself in front of all the sailors down there. But anyway, you know, you got to learn.
Oh, it could have gone a lot worse. It could have been a lot of other things that could have happened, which would have been worse than a Baileys with a load of sailors. True. I can assure you.
Yeah, indeed, with a load of sailors. Yeah.
You sound like a man talking through experience there, Mike. But we'll maybe hold that thought and that image.
Do you know, let's just put it this way, Daz. I've always been open minded. You know, I'm open minded for anything and everything in every situation. Anyway, let's digress and move on quickly.
I'd to say I'm pleased to hear it, but with those connotations, I'm not so sure I am.
Do you know one of the things, Daz, is just don't take life too seriously. I mean, I get accused a lot. I see people writing these things about you, and, you know, and it's quite funny, really. You know, everybody thinks they know you, they haven't got a clue. And they say, you know, he's just the playing at it, you know, the playing at it. And it's as if, and I'm sure you probably get it, because I know you like a bit of a laugh and a joke, and you're quite a chill guy. I've talked to Mark a few times. He's good as gold. You know, you can have a bit of banter. I think when you do this job, it's arduous, it's laborious, it's tiring, it's, you know, it's emotionally draining. You've got to have a bit of the crack. And if you don't, it you're not going to stick in this job for long. Or you just become like one of these grey-haired, stiff old boys who generally has lost the will for life. And you're probably not going to get anything out of them when it comes to trying to build and grow a business. So, you know, I'm just all about having a bit of banter, but there is a serious aspect to the job we're doing.
Yeah, look, I totally agree. I'm fortunate that behind the scenes I've got a really, really good board, actually, that we do have some giggles and some laughs. And when you're chatting to people, and it is behind the scenes invariably, you do have your moments and you need them. People underestimate the amount of stress and the amount of work that this entails. This is a 24/7 job. And I'm not going to lie, you know, I'm really looking forward to Christmas this year, and I'm going to put my emails on, you know, give me a shout in the new year, because we need it this year. It has been tough, but it's been tough for everyone. It's been tough on a corporate level. Yeah. It's been tough. It's been tough for the brokers. It's been brutal for investors. But I'm so pleased that we end the year on such a positive note as well. But yeah, no, you've got to have a giggle, Mike.
Yeah, it's important to have a giggle. How are you finding it, Mike? Are you any regrets?
Not really. I mean, look, the decision really has been made thousands of years ago. We're not going to change it. You know, geologically, the gold is there or the gold is not there. It's just whether we're in the right place at the right time, and the, you know, the work that we've done is sufficient to see us through. You know, we've done a huge amount of work on the assets up at Queensland. Totally underappreciated. There's no point in me coming on here complaining when I look at, you know, other companies that I know are working equally as hard. I know Darren personally as well as, you know, in the business world, and I know how hard some of these lads are working. I mean, I went around the investor show, stuck the camera in front of Daz and said, look, let's try and support one another as best we can. It's not an easy environment to operate in. You know who the good guys are who are trying. The decision, the outcome will be made if you've just done enough, you know, sort of work, early stage work, reconnaissance work. You've done all your sort of soils, your seds, your rock chips, and then ultimately, you're punching holes in the earth where you think, with a good rationale, technical rationale, that you're in the right place, and you know, that's the job really. The rest of it, it's a piece of cake. I mean, you know, I think. Regulations tough because there's things that, and I'm sure this is one of the things that Darren probably had to adapt to when he first went into the job. I didn't have the benefit of easing my way in as a non-exec, or you know, sort of hanging around on the periphery, been thrown straight into sort of shot. But that's because we've been working over in Cyprus and in Canada on another sort of private venture, Nick and I, and you know, we've already seen a successful drilling campaign there. So, you know, we hope we can continue that in Victoria in Creswick, and of course, you know, get out in the field and get drilling up in Queensland in 2024. We've got a lot of ambition. We've got a lot of, a lot of motivation. We'll wait and see. But yeah, I mean, it's different. That's for certain. It's different. But at the same time, you know, it's a job. Once you say you're going to have a go at it, you've got to give it your best go. I don't do things by half measures. And I'm sure that's, again, the same for you, Daz.
Yeah, no, look, early doors with the business, early doors in 2023. I knew then that 2023, unless there was a major shift, was going to be a year about preserving value as opposed to creating it, and that goes against a lot of the narrative on the public markets. But you know what, sometimes you've got to go against that narrative, and you know, as a result of your stance, you're going to be you're going to come up against criticism, and but we've stayed true to our beliefs. And now we get to the end of the year and things are looking hugely more positive. Even yesterday, we saw the UK inflation come down to, 3.9%, looking like interest rates are going to start heading south as opposed to north. We saw the announcement that energy bills should come down substantially in April. So all of the trajectory is positive now. We're seeing more liquidity into the market. And there's a bit of a shaking out going on, which you'd expect after such a just sort of 18 months of doom and gloom. You've seen the Fed pivot. You've got COP28, where they're basically moving from a hydrocarbon economy to a metals economy. And this is all extremely positive for all of us. So, we've preserved the value. It's about growth now. It's about growth.
Look, man, the positives that I take from it as well is, you know, I guess the damage that these sort of big sort of institutions, high net worth guys, whoever it was who's been ironed out in 2023, the damage that they can cause as being well and truly inflicted onto the market. So you get a sniff and a wave of interest. You start to look at the sort of macro picture and say things are looking more encouraging. You can bet your bottom dollar that when it starts to sort of work its way down to the juniors and the small cappers, the impact will be big. It'll come quickly, and hopefully it'll be aggressive. And we'll see, you know, and I know, for you know, investors that are watching this, whether they invested in Panther ECR or any other they're going to sort of resonate. This will resonate. And it simply is, you're going to look at those things that have moved 20, 30%. You're going to say, no, this isn't the time to buy. I've been conditioned through 2023 not to buy these things that have had that move because scalpers are aggressively at work, you know, and the move's not there. And it'll be 15, 100% up. And you're going to sit there and you're going to go, shit, I've seen this before. I saw this 5, 6, 7 years ago when the market traded sideways and downways, and now it's going up and I can't catch the wave. Now you've got an emotional battle and you've got to see if you can overcome that quickly enough to try and find the opportunity so you can jump on that crest of a wave and ride it. And if you don't, you miss it and you regret it. You'll learn from it. It might take you another 3 to 5 years to get the next opportunity. But either way, you're either going to benefit materially from it or you're going to miss it and you're going to learn from it. But it's going to happen. It's happened before and it's cyclical. And you know, honestly, I heard a pretty savvy guy say to me in the last, maybe even a month or two ago, and he said, I don't think the markets are ever going to recover. When I heard that, because I'm the eternal optimist, of course, I went, well, there's another little indicator that we're just about to be on the cusp of a turnaround, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And you'll see the same headline when it's all at the top as well. Markets can never have a down day. But, I mean, you're right. It'll come through. I mean, we've seen the DJI's all-time highs, the NASDAQ all-time highs. They've all blown off their tops. You've got the S&P 500 there. I watch that every day. It's not quite done it yet, but it's only a few, you know, ticks away from, again, being at all-time highs. I mean, you know, there's the big indices, you know, the money is coming back. You can definitely feel it. Well, and it will work its way down.
Yeah, on that, Mark, I've heard from, I think it's 3 different sources now regarding an early-stage investment fund in the city that's had record inflows in November and of capital. And once you're... That's unheard of over the last few years. And that's because we're a coiled spring, right? I expected in 2020, 2021, it was clear the forecast regarding the supply side in 4 to 5 years' time on metals was grim. That hasn't improved in the slightest. In fact, it's probably gone backwards. Yet we've also had another period of 4 years of contraction in terms of exploration into discoveries. So that coil spring has gone tighter and tighter. And you've seen governments now starting to come in supplying capital. And that's because they know the direction of travel. The market does know the direction of travel. And I strongly believe it's been waiting for an excuse to drive. But as Mike says, if over the last year, 18 months, you've been surviving by taking your 10% and your 20%, which a lot of the smart guys have done, and fair play to them for that, you've now got to adjust your thinking on that. Because if you remain at the same thing as taking the 10 and 20%, and you're taking that off the table and you're living off of that, then you're going to miss basically what this sector set up to do. And it is the 100, 200. You know, the risk capital deserves 500, 1,000% in various companies. And that's what we've got to aim for as corporates. But you have got to adjust your mindset according to the market. And that's a really interesting point that Mike made.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, you've got all of this sort of underinvestment. You've got, you know... We've known for a long time that this ESG green world, green energy world is upon us. But there's not been sufficient investment into copper, you know, so the demand, whether it's then right now or not, will be in the future. And if you've not got the supply, you've got a serious situation that's going to unfold. And that alone may well be, you know, all it needs for some of these small little copper plays to see, you know, massive, you know, moves to the upside. Same with gold. You know, you start going from, you know, $1,800, $1,900 to $21, $22, $24, $26. You know, you start thinking about that. And then the value of these projects is immense. I think what's more important, and I haven't asked you this question yet, Daz, but, you know, we had some big players come into our booth at Mines and Money. I'm not going to name them. Don't want to get into that sort of game of being too, you know, sort of promotional. And I know that some of the other companies that we're familiar with had meetings too with pretty, you know, significant players. And when I sat down with one of the guys there, he said to me, look, he said, you know, there just isn't there's not enough of the projects development side that we can take forward. You know, we're now having to come down to sort of exploration and see what's available, because we're being tasked with, we're trying to fill a bit of a situation that's unfolding. And now we've gone from production stories to development stories to exploration stories, and they're going to and they're coming all the way down. And that alone tells you, you know, those guys aren't sitting in front of companies like ours if there's not a massive requirement, or they're not forecasting a massive requirement to find projects that are suitable.
Yeah, now you've seen the majors over the last couple of years reintroduce their exploration teams. They've all now developed their departments where they're looking for the early stage opportunities that might actually contain something. We've got clear evidence of that on Ubonga, and I'm not turning this into a Panther Metals promo by any stretch, but we've got people waiting on us to drill on Ubonga, and they're in contact and they're asking us when are we going to drill, and they've had to be a little bit patient, because I wouldn't destroy the structure of the business to satisfy. Just to satisfy them, because we know that we've got the area. But yeah, absolutely. And you're going to see this accelerate as well, because you've got to remember that this is in 2023. We're actually seeing quite a few deals at the top end, and that invariably filters through. And again, the market's just ignored that. But there's two things. Number one is the majors are over everyone, and the second one is that there is definitely capital available out there, and substantial capital. And that was clear from Mines and Money. So anybody that tells you that it isn't, they've probably got the wrong projects.
Yeah.
And the difference is when you decide to pull the trigger on that capital, or if indeed you need it. I've turned down the last 3 months of 2023. I've turned down millions upon millions, because I wouldn't dilute at this level. I don't need.
How important is that as well? I of course, you know how important it is, but I think it's worth articulating. You know, when Nick and I came into the job, we could have raised twice what we took. You know, but it was about being careful with the dilution. You know, totally saturating ECR as a company, and we would never be able to trade the right the right way. And as it was, you know, the share never got down to place in price. They've traded up, they're a decent premium today, and we're happy about that. It was the right decision. We've disposed of some assets, which people said, you know, you're not going to drill, we're not going to do this, we've done it, we're not going to dispose of assets and generate revenue or cash back to the company for it. We did. But it's super important, and it's something that I really sort of admire with you, Darren, because it's been difficult to take the flak, to see that, you know, the, I suppose in these liquid dry markets, the desperation in the share price sometimes, but yet, you know, you haven't been, as much as your back might have felt like it was to the wall, you haven't been held at gunpoint, and you haven't done that sort of, you know, fundraise that we've seen many, many other companies do. And I think it's important to articulate just how significant that is when you're looking at bringing the project forward at Ubonga or any of these other projects that you've got. You know, the investors need to appreciate it, or they should. We hope they'll learn to appreciate it by the price action in due course. But, you know, it's an important point. There's so many of these little companies that just said, do you know what, give us that 5 or 6 million quid. We want to advance the project. Equity holders have been ironed out, but we've now got, you know, we've got a funding partner or whatever. And I think they become disenfranchised with the secondary market. They've forgotten that without these guys, these tiny little sort of micro businesses at sub 10 million quid that get to 100 or 200, you know, they only get there when they got that support of a secondary market. Of course, you need a good financial backer at certain points within that trajectory. But if nobody wants to buy the shares in the secondary market, then it's really, really unlikely you're going to be the darling of AIM, that 10 or 25Xs, you know. And I've seen how those companies work, and it's important that investors really appreciate that there's these subtle differences between yourself and maybe some of these of the competitors who've just given up and said, look, we just want the money. We want to drive the project forward. We've got a backer now, and let's go and find out whether we can get the outcome we think is, you know, out in the field technically. And
it's a balancing act. It's difficult though, isn't it? Because it's like if you raise shares, but issue shares, but then the share price, you know, you create value, then there is no dilution there, is there, in that sense? But you want to make sure that when you are raising funds, that it's not at a significant, I think that's a big thing, a significant discount. That's really a kick in the teeth to investors, isn't it?
I can only go on my side though, gents. I felt that we were in quite a unique situation. Number one, I fully recognise that we're on the public markets, and as a result of the public markets, we are there to grow and drive the business, right? But the underlying thesis was I didn't feel that there was anything we could deliver in 2023, certainly up until the end of November anyways, that would actually make a significant difference to the business. So as a result, if that's my personal belief, I have to, as a CEO, I have to stay true to my beliefs and true to what I'm seeing. So pulling the trigger during that time, is that the right thing to do? It's because it's a unique set of circumstances, right? And that actually goes against everything I believe in, because ultimately any business, you should be looking to expand it and grow it. But there was nothing you could do in the exploration sector in most of 2023 that would actually achieve that.
So you if you got a discovery, it wouldn't affect the share price much. If you didn't get a discovery, which the odds are against you, you'd have been severely punished for it.
Yeah, that's right. But then you potentially got to go back into the market again to raise capital to keep proving that up. So you're actually
Your relationship. You've also got an issue that your relationship between company and market becomes massively fragmented, because you know investors, I lose hope on a month-by-month basis during 2023. So you can give them exactly what they want, and it's still not enough. And again, you know, I can only speak from my experience. We announced that we were going to drill. People started selling the shares. Why selling the shares? You know, why is the market selling shares? We don't think there'll be any news now until the middle of February. I mean, really? Do you think that, you know, I've been an investor for a lot of years. Do you think that we just decided we were going to go and pog holes in the ground and sit around and do nothing and, you know, sort of eat turkey at Christmas? That's not our game. That's not where we're at. You know, we've got drill results out of Queensland. We've got drilling at Davy Road completed, samples off for assay. We've got drilling, you know, kicking off in the new year up at Cuboid Hill, hopefully. And we've got a lot of other plans that we can't discuss. We've got a license under application. Like, if people are sitting there thinking we're going to go to the dark days of one RNS every 3 months, it ain't going to happen on my watch. I can assure you of that. But unfortunately, you know, and we're at a period now where we can start to see that there's more interest. So, you know, I guess I'm one of the luckier ones who come into the job where interest levels are picking up, but I can still see that relationship with people and the people that I know as well. You know, they're still struggling. They're still struggling to connect and understand what it is you're doing. So I can, you know, I totally agree with Darren. I think there's been a real period now where you could have had the best results. You could have gone and brought the best backer in. And I just don't know if you'd have got, you know, the outcome that you'd have hoped for. But 2024 is a different animal, and hopefully, you know, we'll start to see that for a bunch of these companies.
No, I think you've timed it well. You know, timed it quite well, Mike. There certainly, and Darren, of course, as well. You got active on the ground, haven't you, recently with Panther?
Exactly.
But I mean, we've spoken about this before, Darren, about the kind of attitude to investing in explorers, particularly in London, and it's more of a trader's mindset, isn't it? I think that people have perhaps got to have a more of a longer term vision on these things, because why would you sell shares in ECR when they've announced a drilling? Because that, why are you invested in an exploration company? If
it's
not,
a cycle it's a up, isn't it?
It's exciting, isn't it, to go treasure hunting? I'd be absolutely buying shares at that point. It's a risk, of course, yeah. It's a risk. But isn't that what we get the buzz from?
It's a theme, Mark. That's become, you know, it's become infectious. It at some point during 2022, there was an evolution, you know, within the way that the market behaves and acts. And of course, now everything's for a short-term trade and trying to scalp, make a few quid, you know, trying to keep your head above water the best you can. You know, don't get involved too much for too long, because then you can insulate yourself a little bit against some of these dire results and placings and whatever else might be going on. And I just think that's what's happened. But that, again, this is all cyclical, so that will change. You'll start to see those 30, 50, 100% rises we talked about. You'll start to see those big 10x returns. Suddenly people will go, well, I can sit at the screen all looking at it, and I can try and scalp for 10 or 20%, or I can find something, do some sort of fundamental analysis, look at a situation, say, you know what, that's for me, and park your cash for a little bit of time. And it's those guys, when you start seeing those investors making the big returns, you'll start seeing the Range Rovers and the Lamborghinis and all that sort of shite, and, you know, the fancy houses overseas. And as soon as you see it, that's gone. The 10%ers are finished then. It's all about trying to find the next 3 to 5 year small cap one that can make it. And it'll be the decisions that, you know, the likes of Darren has made, which is not to iron out an issue, shed loads of equity during a terrible period, that'll pay off, and it'll pay big. That's my view. And you know, I'm not here to just keep blowing smoke down Darren's ass, but we're on a chat together. No, but there'll be lots of other companies too.
I've actually become aware of, is it a coincidence that the London market is showing a lot more signs of life only within a couple of months of Mike Whitlow joining the board of an explorer, you know?
You know what? My head's already big enough. It doesn't need to get any bigger, you know what I mean? But, you know, bad genetics, whatever you want to call it. Look, mate, it's... I've been kicking around for so long in this game. It felt good to me. It felt like it was a good opportunity. I felt that it was, you know, some of these companies were down on the luck. Some of the boards of directors were coming as exacerbated as the investors. And it's presented an opportunity. You know, people like me shouldn't have been doing, you know, media blogging and writing and all this sort of stuff, podcasting. When you look at what Mark's doing and the guys at Stockbox, and you look at some of the other service providers, that's how it should have been done. You know, 10 years ago when I was kicking about, it was just because there was nobody else out there doing it. And I thought, you know what, I can do this. And you know, it was pretty successful. Same with the market. You know, people like me really shouldn't come from the background I've come from and do as well as I've done over the years. But it just showed, it's not because I'm smart. It's because there's a lack of enterprise value in the market. And you know, unfortunately, we're seeing that in some of these companies too. So it presents great opportunity. You know, I don't want to be here for 5 years or whatever in the job. I want to be here for 5 months if I can have a nice discovery, you know, line up somebody fantastic for the job who's better than I, and move on and give investors what they need and what they want. And look, that's my sort of mantra moving forward. But yeah, it's feels like it's a good time. You know, it feels like it's a good time to learn a lesson. If it goes wrong and the timing's wrong, I'll learn from it. If the timing's right, I'll benefit financially from it.
I think that's something though, Mike and Mark as well, that London has to actually get a grip of, right? You guys are drilling. We've seen other companies drill, and it's the companies that are drilling that are going to change the market and get those 5, 10, 20x returns, right? So don't criticize the guys that are drilling that don't make the discovery. If all the work's done correctly to get them to that point, if it isn't there, it isn't there, right? But you need to as a market support those businesses. There's enough of them out there that never put a drill hole in the ground because they're scared to fail. We can't be scared to fail.
Yeah,
and that's absolutely something that that the people need to sort of to come to terms with, that that if you're putting the drill holes in the ground, you are the one creating the liquidity, the money, the investment for all those boats to rise. So support those guys. Don't look for the ones that aren't drilling. Don't criticize the ones that are. They're not putting drill holes in the ground for no reason.
Human nature does, isn't it? Unfortunately, I mean, you know, we can do all of the work, as you say, and then, you know, you think nailed on results, and unfortunately, it doesn't work out that way. And maybe as an investor, I didn't appreciate that. The more I've got involved in companies that do, then you look at companies like the silver company down in Idaho, Hercules. You know, they drill that area for silver. You know, relatively shallow holes. Oodles of times, and then suddenly they go and hit a porphyry copper discovery, and they're now at something like a kilometer down, and they're still in mineralization. You know, it's going to be epic, huge, apparently. And I spoke to one of the early investors down. You know, he was down at Mines and Money, and I said, look, you must have put a lot of time in to understand that one when you put the money in as early as you did. And he went, no, so that. Done 14 of these where I financed for early stage companies. And he said, I'm just lucky. Yeah. So there's, you know, you can have the best geologist in the world, you can have the best rationale, you can have and then you sit down with a guy who's probably turned, you know, 300 or 400 grand as a part of a group himself, maybe £1 million early on into a company. And that's now worth 25 million quid, 50 million quid, whatever the number is. Just incredible. So, you know, it's not an exact science either. But you're right. It's the companies that are out there that are doing these things that are giving people the hope and the inspiration to want to invest. And that's ultimately where that, you know, we're going to see all that liquidity. And, you know, a lot of the early narrative will come from that, you know, from people who are successful. And there's going to be disappointments along the way.
Yeah, and there's something on that you just said that would probably people should be aware of. There isn't a geologist you talk to in greenfield exploration that doesn't say, not a single one that doesn't say, you've also got to be a bit lucky. Yeah. And that's the realities of it. But then the balancing off of that is the fact that the returns are so big on the plus side. And that's why we're doing it. And you just got to do it the right way. But what do you think about some of the equity being taken out of the market this year? I'm just interested. Because look, there's a lot of people out there suffered. I don't want to turn this negative. There's a lot of people out there suffered. And I'm just interested in your views on that.
Well, so where it's gone, you mean? I mean,
well, just some of the destruction of value.
AMTE Power. What about that one? You know, it comes in at 150p, trades up to 300. It suspends. Lights out. I mean, it's like that's happened in such a short space of time. Millions and millions of pounds have been spunked in the market, and shareholders now, you know, pretty destitute. Pluto Digital. Someone talked to me about that. 21, 20, whenever it was. Pluto Digital is going to be the next. I got a message yesterday night. All night before, and it said going into administration by the looks of it. I mean, you know, what does that do for it? Just so much money's been taken out of the market. It's going to, you know, it is taking something quite unique and special to see it start move back in. And, you know, we believe it is. That's why we're in the job we're in. But there's been some horrendous car crashes, hasn't there?
Yeah, and only yesterday was it Copple down 60%. They couldn't get the deal fell through or something, or the funding. I'm not really sure what the news was, but yeah, seriously down yesterday. But that's just bad. It's just bad news, isn't it? But also bad management in a sense, isn't it? I would have said.
How many of these funders, though, do you think, Mark? You know, yeah, we'll fund your business. We'll give you a line of, you know, here's 400,000 or 500,000 quid now, and we'll give you a line of 5 or 10 million quid. To develop your project. We're just going to do a little bit of due diligence, and then they run it right to the wire and say, we need to do a bit more due diligence. Well, you know, the market doesn't let you trade insolvent, so then you suspend, and once you're suspended, you can't raise any money, or very difficult. Then you can't raise any money, so the asset goes into, and it's into administration. Well, you can bet your bollocks to a barnyard door who's taking those assets out. It's the same guy that said, you know what, we'll fund you once we've done the due diligence. I think there's a lot of that going on, a lot of game playing going on, you know, in the upper echelons of the financing world too. People can see where there's good assets and good opportunity, and they're stitching some of these companies up like an absolute kipper. And if you're not, you know, if you don't have a conscientious board of directors, you could find yourself being exposed to that and ultimately falling on the sword with good assets.
And look at Helium One, 60 million market cap, what, a month ago? They announced that they're going to have to raise funds because they broke the drill bit or something. The whole of the city basically apparently went short on them, and that they've gone from 60 million, they raised at 2.5 million market cap, sort of just announced this morning.
That's 70% down this morning.
Yeah, 70 down just this morning. It was 6p, and actually 6 months ago it's 10p. You know, it's in maybe even only 3 months ago. Extraordinary amount of capital. But is that the board's fault? Should they be ahead of that curve? You know,
I spoke to loads and loads of people who were on boards of directors for years, and Mark probably does it too. And you can sense sometimes when you speak to people, particularly in the pharma space, biotech, or you know, anything science related, they understand that their business, they know their onions well. When it comes to the corporate side, they're wholly reliant on advisors. And if you've got hungry advisors who aren't making a lot of money, they're not going to do what's best for you. They're going to do what's best for them. And unfortunately, that's again what we're seeing. And you know, is it the board's fault? I think there's got to be an element of accountability, but it's the advisors I'd be looking at. Some of these advisors, they're acting with impunity. You know, they're introducing, you know, Lansted, and they're introduced. So your advisor's not even working with the best intention for the equity holder, the shareholder. So you know that's dangerous. When the guys who are advising you are saying, do you know what, you should probably think about this. By the way, if you don't want to do that, we can introduce you to Bergen, or YHA Global, or Lansted, and we know how that ends. So it's advisors as well. You've got to look at. And look, you know, I know that I'm putting a massive cross. Sorry, Mark. Yeah, I mean, I'm putting a big crosshair over my head at the minute by saying that, but it's nothing short of what I've said publicly for many, many years, and I feel obliged to perhaps just remind investors that these are the things that they have to consider too. It's not to say that ECR is going to be bulletproof in every way, not to say Panther is, but it be mindful. We have to be mindful and aware.
I remember that death spiral with YHA ECR when I was a shareholder. That was, constant disappointment when that news came out. Yeah.
Mike, do you think it's beneficial? Maybe our backgrounds, because they're reasonably similar.
Absolutely.
You're living in areas where everyone ducks and dives a bit, and you have to build relationships, you know who to keep an eye out for, and naturally, and that's just part of your day-to-day routine of not quite survival, but you had to have your wits about you. If you stepped out your front door, you had your wits about you.
Yeah.
A little bit more streetwise, you mean? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, more street, because the city, at times, you call it an old boys network, but I think down at the micro cap level, it is a different type of network. And it's a type of network that's set out to take advantage of the micro cap market as much as it can. And I get that, right? Everyone's trying to earn a crust, but then it's my responsibility to make sure that we don't trip over during that process as best we can within the confines of the market that we're operating in.
I do wonder
if that's where a more lower social level of background does actually come in as an advantage as opposed to a disadvantage.
No accountability, an absence of integrity. You know, the list is endless with some of these guys in these companies. I mean, again, I would love to sit here, maybe I will do it at some point, and start really, you know, reeling them off. you know, we raised £2 million at 0.05, not going to name the company. I raised £2 million and we're going to do all of these things, do absolutely jack shit. And then, you know, you've raised another, I don't know, £1 million or whatever the figure was at 002. So you've had 70% discount to get from C to B, and then B to A is another 60% discount. It's just like, it's pathetic. The people have got no backbone, no integrity, no common decency, very poor moral compass, and they'll sit and look you square in the eye and could still convince you that they're acting with an element of decency that just, doesn't exist with some of these guys. And I agree with you, Aaron. I mean, you know, we've spoke before, you know, go and work in oil and gas and power and some of these types of industries. Go in there and, you know, bullshit somebody, you know, look them square in the eye and mislead them. It's only ending one way, and it's going to end up with one of them right on the button. And that's, and when you realize that this, you've got to be accountable for what you're saying you do, you generally act a little bit differently. Some of these guys, they're probably short of it, you know, that they didn't come from that background, so therefore they didn't get exposed to that sort of stuff. So when you're working with people and you're guiding them and you're saying, look, this is what I'm going to do for you, you do it, and you do it well. You work hard and you put the hours in. You don't try and duck and dive and be shifty, because it ends up with you're either getting fired, thrown off site, or you're getting filled in, one or the other. And that's what these guys should have never had any exposure to it. And when I used to call these people out on, you know, social media back in the early days, they hated it because they didn't know how to deal with it. There should be more of it, you know, as much as, you know, certain market commentators, and this, you know, nobody likes anybody who's gonna challenge people, but you need that, you know, you need somebody to challenge you. If you don't, you have these companies that are running amok, and it's really planting a seed of doubt in people's minds where they say they're all as bad as each other, and they're just simply not.
It does make me laugh. Some of the, so just occasionally you come across a situation, an email, where people are trying to bully you into something, and they think that they've almost got one over on you in terms of their approach, and that you're going to curtail, and it. Always, in every single instance I've come across that with Panther, I've actually just sat back and laughed to myself, because it shows that some people really have no idea what it's actually like there in the real world. That's an email isn't bullying. You're not going to force your hand with that. And in fact, it's the complete opposite. You just go back and say, yeah, okay, try again.
Well, that, you know, Darren, I know your background too, and it's like, you know, I obviously took a decent stake in more acquisitions, so I was pretty vocal about everything that went on. And then the guy, they were doing a transaction with a company, a steel company, right? So, you know, you'll have dealt with these types of people, and suddenly they say, yeah, we're not going to proceed with the transaction because somebody said nasty words to my wife or to my daughter. I mean, come on. You know, you imagine some of these building yards and some of these building sites, what, you know, the topic of conversation. If you've been in that business for 30, 40 years, honestly, I mean, you're not going to be deterred by somebody calling you a fat fuck or whatever it is. It's like, look, it's pretty obvious, that one, isn't it? You know, like, dig a bit deeper if you want to try and rile me, because it just, you know, whatever the phrase it is, whatever the attack is, like, you've really, really got to work hard, because after 30 years, you're not going to, like, falter or fail at somebody saying nasty things. But unfortunately, people keep trying it, Daz, don't they? You know, they just keep trying that nonsense.
It's amusing. It is amusing. It really is. But then, to be fair, on the flip side, look, $200-300 million market cap, oh no, that's my time to go. Because I you know, you do need a different type of person at those levels, and I won't be that corporate beast walking down those corporate corridors, because it has no interest for me. So yeah. You know, you also have to know your own levels within it. So it's it's good fun.
And again, this is where people unfortunately let companies down, because they don't know the levels. You know, I've coached elite sport in my background, and I've known when I need to step aside. And you know, I've had people come to me and say, no, you know, that you're needed, stay with what you're doing. The club want you, the team need you, the players. No, I need to step aside and let somebody who's got that technical ability to be able to enrich the team and to drive them forward. I'll support from the sidelines. You know, I'll support where I can, because it's understanding levels and knowing when to make that move. It doesn't always happen in sport. It doesn't always happen in business. It doesn't happen with some of these companies. So to really say that, you know, again, credit to you, mate, because a lot of guys just don't know when to step aside. They don't know when to bring in additional help. I think they get caught up with big egos as well. So, you know, it's in, it, this is where those, they go from one to 100 and then back to one. Just don't know when to give up, do they?
No.
So what are we thinking on next year then? Are we thinking, what companies are we going after?
Make shitloads of money and then go to Thailand or something and get drunk for a fortnight. It'd be nice. Well, but, I mean, in the meantime, work really hard to get the most out of it.
But I want to make loads of money and move to Cyprus, where all the money from the UK seems to be moving. Do we know anyone that's in Cyprus at the moment?
Israel, Russia, Ukraine. I mean, Chinese. There's so much development going on. Where you go to Limassol now, there's high rises everywhere that never existed. It's changing. Right. Unfortunately, the downside to it is, you know, that sort of the ambiance of the Cypriot way is being lost. The identity is being lost, sadly. I've been around here for 15 plus years and it's changing at such a rapid pace, but huge amount of opportunity, huge amount of cash here. And yeah, I guess it's one of those places that, again, has had quite a lot of underinvestment. You know, the Turkey situation.
Did you just like the place?
Cyprus? Yeah, I like. Believe it or not, I know I've got like a, you know, like that pasty sort of gingery look, but I actually like the sunshine. So, yeah, I like not to be freezing. Plus, it's well sort of documented a while ago. I got badly injured in 2003, so I've got my right leg's pretty shot as well. So I walk every day to try and maintain this great physique. And the warm weather and climate is great for it. So, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
You're welcome anytime.
No, yeah, I'll come over. Yeah, why not? Yeah, we can do something in your I don't know what you've got, apartment, villa, I don't know. We'll do something at your digs, do a podcast.
Digs.
But yeah.
A very modest home. It is a very modest home.
A very modest home. Okay.
Yeah, a very modest home.
Yes. I've heard that from a few people living in 8-bedroom houses.
do you know what? Honestly, this is no crap. Like, I mean, I speak to loads of people in the city, and you know, we could have bought a much bigger house. We bought a house where it's an estate of 50 private properties. It is, you know, sort of on its own, if you will. But there's families. You know, my neighbour on the road is a ex Procter & Gamble PR guy from Slovenia who's got, you know, a lovely son and daughter. And it's community and it's people. And I think that's, if you come from that background, it's hard to find yourself on the side of a hill with nobody to say good morning to. I'm a bit of a social butterfly, believe it or not.
That's awesome. Do you know what? I live in a village, and this week there's a house through the village that always leaves water out, a water bowl out for the dogs.
Yeah.
All year, and it's always topped up with water. And all year we're walking on, especially in the summer. The dog, my Lola, my dog, she loves it. And this week I popped round there. Don't know who lived there. And drop them a box of chocolates off as from a thank you for the dog. But that's about community, isn't it? It's recognizing community, and that's really important for everyone. So, you know.
But then it's market again. Let's go back to the markets. You know, if you can build the community, you can build that interest. If people have, you know, a little bit of trust in you, they understand the risk. So again, we have to make sure that we remind people of that. We can be the greatest people in the world, but we can't guarantee an outcome. We want that outcome as best as anybody. You know, like I've come in on a pretty much an all in equity stake in the business. I'm that confident in us being able to move the business forward. But you know, you've got to reconnect with people. You've got to build that community. You've got to build that that trust as well. And you know, I've spent ages telling people you should never trust anybody in the market. It's not a team sport, and it really isn't. But at the same time, you have to have some trust that the information that you're being provided with is credible and legitimate. And unfortunately, again, we see that all the time where RNSs come out and everything's fine, and then suddenly, you know, there's a car crash around the corner. You say, well, hang on, you must have known about this. Like, it doesn't just happen overnight. And that's because you can't trust the providers of information. So I guess it's a difficult job being it.
It isn't a team sport, is it, at all? You know, there's a lot of groups and that, and you know, they're really great groups, you know, of shareholders with a similar kind of vision to better their life or to, you know, make some money, and lots of good chat that goes on and discussion. But ultimately, you are really on your own. You are responsible for your own, for your own bank, really, your own money, and you know, you put it at risk. It's your choice to do that. You know, I always had the attitude that, you know, that money is gone now. I've spent it. It's in the market. It's spent. I know it's gone. If it comes good, brilliant, you know, but it's my decision to do that. And also, you've not really got other people around you. You may, you know, you've got to choose your friends close and work wisely, I think, and look after your own money, because, you know, when a company's up, you know, 5x, 10 times, there'll be loads of people saying, and all the boards and all the groups, that it's going to go even more. This is brilliant. All the vibe will come back. But, you know, gee, if you've made 5 times your money, take some off the table at that point, because
always, no one else will do it for you. Always take some off. Always take some off. Absolutely. Sage advice, Mark.
Yeah. But
it's those companies that have got a strong relationship through communication, through community, that perform really well as you know it. Too. So you know, this is an important point. You work in the game of trying to connect investors with directors
and tell the story and connect investors with directors. So yeah, exactly as you say. And I hope that through I get, you know, stick sometimes that I'm, you know, contrived so and so and spin. But I tell you now, the questions are not pre-prepped with the companies. I usually prep a few points and then I usually just follow my nose, you know. And 9 times out of 10, there's no editing done on interviews. If there's something they've said, maybe the nomad is not happy with, fair enough, that has to come out. Or if they stumble a little bit and want to get something a little bit more tighter, that's fine. But, you know, there's no magic PR spin. And we say to PR firms, a lot of PR firms have contacted Stopbox recently wanting to, you know, connect us with their clients. And I've said, you know, we will work with PR firms, but we are not a PR platform. And you can give me questions, but I'll ask my own. Sometimes I don't like that so much. But, you know, I think you've got to do that, because otherwise it's short-sighted, isn't it? You know? And of course, you know, companies pay for the airtime on Stopbox. Of course they do. We've all got to charge for our time. But I hope that people get from what we do that, you know, it is transparent, and you've just got to make your own call, you know, by looking into, you know, Mike Whitlow's eyes, Darren Hazelwood's eyes, and thinking, is this guy trust?
Why he wears glasses? He puts them on so you can't look at them. You see that? You do know Darren doesn't wear any glasses. He just wears them so that you can't see into the whites of his eyes.
He's a shifty little fella, you know. Is that what he is?
I will say, always take somebody on their actions and not their words, and that's especially true in this game, right? I now just go to refer people back to what I've done with a business and that I've stayed true to my personal beliefs. And that makes it tougher a lot of the time. But yeah, so I'm going to wear these glasses permanently just so that Mike Whitlow and Mark can't see the whites of my eyes. They don't need to. Look at me nude.
I'm going to have to cut.
Me too. But let's just ask this. 2024, Mike, what's happening? Panther-wise, listen, now it's time to accelerate. We're seeing a lot more positive market. I've been waiting for this moment since January 2020 when we listed straight into COVID. And we haven't really had a chance to really drive this business in since we listed. But now we've got the assets in place and it's going to be a bloody exciting year. And I'll tell you what, I am so excited for it. As much as I'm tired for 2023, I'm very, very excited for 2024. Mike, what about you?
Well, the family's just arrived back, so we'll see what happens. You'll probably see a little head go by in a minute. Same, you know, we're staying busy, we're staying active, and we've got an exciting 2024 ahead. We're going to keep the work rate and pace up, and hopefully people eventually will appreciate that in the, you know, when it's reflected in the price.
Indeed. Well, there's one more thing we've got to do before we sign off. It's very important. It's my highlight of the year, and this will be probably the last recording that I do of the year. So just let me just do this. You're listening to Stockbox, where we now bring you the annual Christmas message from the CEO of Panther Metals, Darren Hazelwood.
Well, I'd just like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And oh, my apologies, I forgot to mention prosperous, because that's what everybody has to do in the city, of course. So indeed, a very prosperous New Year. And over to Mike in Cyprus.
Yeah, well, Merry Christmas to you all. And yeah, maybe we'll be here at the same time next year and we'll be able to...
We'll be able
to boast about the value that's in the companies that was perhaps not there a year ago. But let's wait and see. It's been great to catch up with you, Mark. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for everything you've been doing this year at Stockbox.
Yeah, brilliant little way to finish the year, I think. And happy Christmas to everyone here, all our viewers on Stockbox. Thank you and for watching. And I'm sure we'll be seeing and hearing from everyone next year. So, yeah, happy holidays, everyone. Thank you. Thank you both.
Happy holidays. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mark.
Merry Christmas, lads.
Merry Christmas.